Welcome to the Becker's Healthcare Podcast. I'm Laura Dierda, an editor at Becker's Healthcare, and I'm thrilled to welcome Dr. Dan Gottschall, Vice President of Medical Affairs for the Fairfield region of Hartford Healthcare in Connecticut. Dr. Gottschall, thank you so much for being here today.
Thank you so much for inviting me.
Could you tell us a little bit more about your background before we begin our questions?
Sure. I'm a board-certified obstetrician gynecologist that been practicing at St. Vincent's Hospital in Connecticut since I finished my residency at University of Connecticut. So I'm in my 25th year. I've been pretty fortunate to have a lot of different roles in leadership, starting really with kind of helping to grow our clinic practice and OBGYN and kind of build some consensus. And then I was asked to be vice president of the medical staff. And then I was a president of the medical staff. As part of that, you stay on the board. I was very fortunate that then they asked me to be the vice chairman, and I was the first physician ever chairman of our board of trustees. Then I became involved in leadership. I'm part of a very big women's health group. We're probably one of the biggest single specialty women's health group in the country. There's a little north of 300 of us in the state of Connecticut that practice as one essential practice in OBGYN, and I was a chief medical officer for that group. And then was asked by my CEO at St. Vincent's if I wanted to come in and what at the time I thought was my dream job to be the chief medical officer, or now vice president of medical affairs for the hospital in the region. And that was 5 years ago. So I'm still very clinically active. I still take full call with my group. I deliver babies. I do a lot of robotic surgery. I do this administrative role where really it's just about continuing to solve problems and really make it easier for physicians, advanced practice providers, and patients to get care within our system. So it's been very rewarding.
Sounds like you've had an amazing career and the opportunity to do lots of things, both on the clinical side as well as on the administrative side of healthcare. So I'm really excited to get your perspective. Can you tell us a little bit about the initiatives that you're most proud of at Hartford Healthcare today?
Well, it's so funny. St. Vincent's was a part of Ascension Health all through the 90s and became part of Hartford Healthcare really a little bit over a year ago, October of 2019. And, you know, this was obviously before the world changed. And one of the things that we were the most excited about and the initiatives was really being able to grow and meet the needs of the growing population and really start to move from a fee-for-value to a fee-for-service and be able to care for populations. That really required us to really be able to expand the breadth and the depth of our medical staff. So probably the most exciting thing that we've been able to do, despite the fact that we're in a pandemic, because in the last year, we've been able to add 200, you know, providers to our medical staff. And that's really by increasing it by, you know, more than 30%. You know, we already had a robust medical staff of about 600 plus, but this was really adding providers like neurosurgeons, more orthopedists, more obstetricians, gynecologists, hospitalists, neurointensivists, you name it, we've been able to grow it and build it. So that's, you know, our non-COVID initiative. But, you know, the most thing that I think what I'm the most proud of as a health system is our leadership and our ability to adapt to the changing environment and to really take the infrastructure that we had put in place and be able to really, unfortunately, test it, you know, as the growing demands of our community required it. I mean, we went to 75% of our patients that were inpatients back in the winter being COVID positive. We had been able to expand our intensive care units to go from, you know, really a 15-bed unit to a 50-bed unit, be able to really push out our ICU providers to extend them to be able to really care for as many as 30 patients as we kind of, you know, use that military type model where we had bedside intensivists reporting up to the intensivists that were overlooking things. And our outcomes were really very positive. Our mortality, you know, certainly was in line, if not better than what we are seeing nationwide. And to be able to do that as a health system, as a medical staff, as a nursing staff, has really been something to behold. You know, I wish we had more time to sit back and reflect on it, but the ability for us to adapt, to change, and to be able to really focus on patient care was something remarkable to be a part of.
It sounds like you were able to mobilize things very quickly and take amazing care of your patients and your community. So that's great to hear. And now, shifting to focus a little bit more on the present and future, how are you seeing COVID-19 play out today? And what are your strategies for mitigating some of the effects of COVID-19 on the community?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we luckily in Connecticut, we had one of the first surges, you know, we peaked in April of 2020. And, you know, we ramped up very quickly in March, and then we seemed to plateau over the summer. Then, like everybody else in the country, we had a blunted second phase that started in October and really peaked the first week in December, it looks like. And we're still somewhat in a plateau here. Luckily, you know, we went back to full operations really the end of May. We had ceased all elective procedures, you know, both on the outpatient and the inpatient side. And, you know, I think what we're very proud of is that really once in May, once we got up to full speed, we've stayed up to full speed despite, you know, the uptick of our COVID positive patients in house. We just, you know, learned number one, how to take care of them better. We learned how to take care of our staff better. We've been able to maximize the lessons learned. I think going forward, the most important thing that we're struggling with, right, is that we continue to see, mostly on the outpatient side, but we continue to see, you know, our patients being positive, but it's managing staff. It's managing, number one, we saw a big uptick in our staff that were positive, you know, as the winter months came. I think that's consistent what they're seeing across the country. So you already had a very fatigued, certainly resilient medical staff, as well as, you know, associates, nurses, techs, respiratory therapists, environmental services, food services, you know, because we were all in this together. And everybody is just so tired. And now they were coming down with the disease themselves, which was limiting our workforce, which was putting more stressors on. So that's been, you know, probably the hardest part. I think the only way we're going to get through this, and it's, I don't know if your listeners have appreciated this, but, you know, we were very fortunate across the country to be able to start vaccinating people on December 15th. Hartford Healthcare, we've, I think, vaccinated close to 17,000 people per date. You know, in Connecticut, we're on phase 1A, which is really, you know, the essential healthcare workers, anybody that has patient care responsibilities when they're interacting with people that are going to be positive. And the disappointing part is that to date, despite our very best efforts, we've only been able to immunize about 46% of the people, not because of access issues, because it's only 46% of the people that are choosing to be immunized. And I think that all of us have a responsibility as healthcare leaders to make sure that, number one, that we get vaccinated ourselves to make sure that we don't get sick. It's been unbelievable. I did receive my second dose of vaccine. It will be a week ago tomorrow. So it was the Pfizer vaccine. And according to their studies, I'll have 95% immunity as early as tomorrow. And that peace of mind for me, that I'm not going to bring this home to my family, to my coworkers, is huge. And we still have a long way to go to make sure that we educate all of our associates so that if in healthcare, we can only immunize 46% of the population. And we think that it's going to be between 75% or higher that's going to allow us to have herd immunity. We're in for a long fight.
That makes a lot of sense. And thank you so much for sharing that all with us. I think, as you mentioned, it's, ideally, we're in the spot where with the vaccine, people are feeling comfortable and confident with it, and hopefully that will happen in the coming months.
Yeah, no, I hope so. I just like I said, I think that it's our responsibility to make sure that as healthcare leaders and educators, that we do our best to make sure that every last person that has a question or concern or reason for why they're choosing not to be immunized. And there's a lot of fear out there. There's a lot of misinformation that we do our best to dispel that because that's, this is in my, I think not just my opinion, certainly I think in leaders across the country, the only way we're going to get to the other side of this pandemic is if we get to that herd immunity. And one of the best ways to do that is to make sure we put shots in arms and get people immunized.
Absolutely. Thank you so much, Dr. Godshall. And the last question I have for you before we wrap up our discussion today is around leadership. What are three pieces of advice that you would have for emerging leaders today?
Yeah, I don't know if I have three per se, but I'll try. I think that number one, do everything you can to be credible. I think it's been very rewarding for me that you want to walk the walk and talk the talk. So as a physician leader, the fact that I'm still clinically relevant, that I go into the operating room, that I'm in the emergency room, that I'm on the wards, that I truly understand, you know, the pain points that the providers go through, and you know, and that it's my role and my goal to soften them and make this a more user-friendly destination for them and then therefore their patients. So number one, do whatever you can to be credible. The other piece, you know, certainly for physician leaders, you know, leading physicians is a lot different than, you know, being a school teacher where you have students, right? You are leading your peers and they need to follow you because you need to understand your purpose or your why. I think the leaders that know why they get up in the morning, that know what they're trying to achieve and can communicate that, then you can really get to build consensus. And the only way you're going to be successful at leading other leaders and is that if they believe what you believe and that you can articulate that and you can communicate that, and then they're going to follow along with you, not for you, but for themselves. And that's, you know, a big piece of advice. And then of course, you know, always, you know, over communicate. We never, despite all of our platforms, you know, there's nothing better than actually picking up the phone and talking to someone and working things through. I think, you know, I've been very fortunate in that, you know, I went into healthcare like all of us did to make a difference in people's lives. And the reason that I became intrigued by administration and governance is because I realized there's only so many lives you can touch when you're taking care of individuals. As you get into leadership, as you get into governance, then you can actually make a difference in tens of thousands and, dare I say, hundreds of thousands of lives and really try and elevate the care. And the only way you really do that is to be, you know, a credible, fair, educator, and communicator, and make sure that, like you said, you share your purpose, but at the end of the day, you want to be transparent because people, especially other leaders and very bright and educated people, are going to know when you're telling them the truth. Not always, you don't always have to agree with them, but you want to be able to make sure that you can articulate the reasons why you can't. And then if you're going to give them a no, don't make it a slow no. Make sure you get back to them quickly, and so that the next time they can know that they trust you. Those would be, I guess, my 3 or 4 points.
Fantastic. I think, as you mentioned, you know, doing what you can to be credible, being able to lead doctors as peers and really having them understand your why behind what you're doing and why you get out of bed every day, in order to build that consensus of the team that you're leading. And then finally, over communicating and being sure to give fair and quick feedback, especially if the answer is a no, it sounds like is really, really key to being a successful, clinician leader today.
Yeah, well, we'll keep trying, right?
Dr. Godshall, thank you so much for your time. I really appreciate you being here today. This has been a really great conversation. I look forward to connecting with you again in the future.
All right, thank you very much. Happy New Year.